What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Progressive Gentleman Podcast. As always, we're your hosts. I'm Dan.
I'm Matt.
We want to thank you for taking the time to nerd out about music with us. This episode is sponsored by Eargasm Earplugs. Use code GENTLEMAN10 at checkout and protect your hearing today. We're excited about this episode. Finally got the guys from Crypto Deer to sit down with us. We really appreciate your time. What's going on, guys?
Not much.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for having us back after we, or kind of having us back after we totally blew it like 2 weeks
right.
ago. I'll take full responsibility.
No worries, guys. No worries. I'm glad we got to have you on.
Exactly. Yeah, the important thing is you're here now.
That's it.
So we kind of like to start these band interview episodes out with sort of an origin story. A lot of the times, you know, a lot of these interviews and things talk specifically about the music and don't really touch on, you know, where you guys came from and you know, how you guys got your start. So we'd love to sort of hear your take on sort of where, you know, where you guys came from, your origin story, so to speak.
Sure. I mean, ultimately, we all went to high school together. And the four of us, it's virtually the same iteration of the band. We kind of bounced between a, when we were younger, 9th, 10th grade, we were playing closer to just straight up death metal, I'd say, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And even before then, we were like, we just wanted to, we were younger. I remember I started playing guitar maybe when I was 11 or 12, something like that. And I didn't have anyone to play with, really. So Matt, who drums in the band, he was in one of my classes. And I said, do you want to play drums in this band? Because I had just started. He really liked Tool. My dad got me into, my dad, big Dream Theater guy, got me into Dream Theater, Porcupine Tree. And then kind of like it all spun off from there. And I was like,
good gateway bands?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, a lot of huge prog gateway bands there. That's awesome.
My dad is like the amount of music that I inherited through him is legitimately insane. And just some of the tendencies, his music listening tendencies, the kind of like open to anything, constantly seeking out new music. My favorite was his, he was working on a little bit more of a budget. I have a little bit more of, he was working on less of a budget. I have a little bit more of a budget in terms of like, if he saw album artwork that he thought was cool, regardless of genre, band name, anything, he'd be like, let me take a chance on this.
I could relate to that so hard.
There's like that. Oh, it's unbelievable. Like I'll be pulling through his records and CDs, be like, why does he have, he had a that good old war band.
Yeah. I like this like indie folk band from Philadelphia called Good Old War. And Mike had probably only heard them from me playing in the van.
Yeah.
It's just totally away from what we do. And one day he just sent me a picture of the CD and he's like, isn't that the band you like? And I was like, the hell did you find that? He's like, oh, it was in my dad's collection. He probably bought it because it looked cool.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah, that's, and so same, cool. I've discovered so many cool bands like that. There's a band, Passport, that's this jazz fusion band. Just look up, after this, look up Passport album artwork. It's the, because I was rummaging through records in a record store. I go, what is this? It was $5. And because of it, I found this unbelievable band. And then through that, kind of like, it then dominoes. I found this cool band called Oracle that I found because of them. Like, and then you open yourself up to a whole different world of music. And that's how my dad operated. I don't know how he fell onto Dream Theater. I think it's because he was guitar oriented to begin with. And we always got those guitar player magazines and they covered Dream Theater relentlessly.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, that's my, I'm listening to this and I'm showing Scott and Matt and Jeremy, to a lesser extent, he had his own adventure with his dad's. His dad's another constantly seeking out new music. I just went to go see Def Heaven with his dad. His dad, Jeremy didn't go, but Jeremy's dad and his brother. It's legitimately unbelievable. It's the same kind of like he's 60 something years old, but he's just like constantly seeking out new music. As opposed to you meet people that are just like, I like what I like, and that's that. It's so yeah. Depressing, but. But yeah, so I said to Matt, I need someone to play the drums, and he convinced his dad, who is another music guy, is a jazz guy, to, you know, let me play drums, and his uncle loves Tool too.
Yeah.
So you know, that's kind of from there, different iterations until we were leaving high school, and we were like, let's try and do this a little bit more seriously. Let's try and be as serious as we can about this. We were constantly going to shows, And we were like, why don't we do this? Why don't we try and really actually do this? And that's kind of it. I don't know if you want to add anything.
That's more or less it. I mean, I just remember being a kid and playing guitar because a friend of mine, like from a couple streets away from where I grew up, rode his bike to my house and set up a guitar in my living room and started playing, I guess just to show off or something. And I was like, and it worked because I was like, that's fucking awesome. So I actually ended up buying that guitar from him. When he got a more expensive guitar, my mom bought it for me for my birthday or something. So I was into like punk and or mainstream punk, like Green Day and stuff like that. And then, you know, started getting into more heavy stuff and metal. And then that's when Mike and I had already been friends for a long time. And he kind of just was like, similar to Matt, it's like, well, you play guitar and you're now playing guitar in this band with me. And I'm like, of course, you know,
yeah.
I never got to play with people. So yeah, like Mike said, then the band just got more serious from there. And it was probably a really cool formative thing because we never had the experience that people have. I think now a little more of like kind of growing up in your room and playing alone, we kind of grew up playing together as a unit. And that's kind of the only way that we knew how to play was just with other people.
Yeah. Cause even before, before latching on to more progressive and prog metal bands and then the rabbit holes that come from that, it was like, AC/DC for me, some glam stuff, Alice Cooper. Still to this day, one of the best shows I've ever been to was one of the three times I saw Alice Cooper. Every time is unbelievable, but and so it was kind of like from the spirit of that kind of like rock music, and then and prog rock as well, but just kind of that like not quite solo bedroom guitar player that kind of is a stereotype of a lot of progressive metal now. We kind of grew up away from that and then, you know, melded that influence with the other stuff that we also like. But I grew up on like still like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Was there because you said Green Day and then like Alice Cooper bands like that. Was there sort of a gateway band for you to metal? Would you say that's Dream Theater? Was there a gateway band to heavier music? Because the music that you guys play is quite heavy. So that would be my curiosity.
We probably both have different answers, but
give
for me,
I'm gonna get a Red Bull.
He's already leaving, man. God, oh, my camera zoomed in on me and everything. That's terrifying.
Close up.
Yeah, it's your close up.
Yeah. No, for me, for metal specifically, it was Avenged Sevenfold. Actually, when I was a kid, it was like my favorite band. But as far as progressive music goes, it's definitely Dream Theater, yeah. And that would have been Mike's dad giving us a train of thought, and Mike passed that along to me, and so on and so forth. So yeah, for metal and prog, two different answers, but you know, same ballpark.
So yeah. I have two formative records in elementary school that I remember. Third grade,
wow. Oh, damn.
Was Creed Weathered, which is an unbelievable record.
Riffs,
that holds
man.
Up.
There are riffs for days on that record.
Anyone who pushes back on you about that, literally, Weathered, that's the record. Put Bullets on. It's unbelievable.
I just did this at work, like, recently. I was making the Riffs Don't Lie argument to a friend that I work with, and he's like, dude, come on, Creed. I was like, listen, I'm not saying you're going to like the whole song. I'm not saying you're going to like vocals, whatever your gripe happens to be. But there's one thing that is universally accepted, and that is a riff is a riff is a riff is a riff. Does not matter where it comes from. So I put on the song Bullets by Creed, and it just kind of comes in, and he does this look like...
Great bands.
Fuck, I guess you're right. That's a riff. Like, he goes, this is Creed? I'm like, yes. Yes, this is Creed.
And
okay?
Unfortunately, my dad... Well, not unfortunately, my dad loved Creed, but unfortunately, in high school, I hit an age where I was like, Creed? Come on, man. And he was like, he was like, you know, whatever, Creed rocks. And he went to go see Creed. And he was like, you want to go? Because he was constantly taking me to shows, you know, with the family, with himself, his friends. He goes, you want to see Creed? I'm going to see them. I was like, I don't want to see Creed. He's like, all right, man, whatever. He went to go see Creed. He came back. He's like, one of the best shows I've ever been to. He saw Zeppelin before Bonham died.
Oh, wow.
He saw, he was, wow. He was.
He just went to stuff.
He just, oh, constantly. One of the things that he decided not to go to, when because he was stationed, he was in the Air Force in the late 70s, early 80s, and he was stationed in Germany. And he would just, he called the Air Force the country club of the military, because he would mostly, it set him on like an interesting path in terms of discipline, in terms of working, like working out, waking up early, that kind of thing, which he maintained his whole life. But he had this kind of freedom to, oh, him and his buddies would go to shows. He saw literally the last Zeppelin tour. Bonham died after the European tour that he saw him on. Wow. he decided not to go see AC/DC on Back in Black tour. So I guess this was early 80s, 81, 80. Iron Maiden opened up. He didn't know who either band was. He was just like, I'm tired. I don't want to go tonight. which I, growing up, my favorite band pretty much was AC/DC at that young age. And I was a little bit upset with him that he didn't go to it. As like, just insane.
My mom saw AC/DC.
What tour?
For those about to rock. She said the awesome. Cannon made her ears ring for like 3 days.
That record's like one of their worst, I think. But the song is unbelievable.
The song is very good.
Yeah. And I'm an AC/DC. Like, I think most of their records are good. And sound different. I think that's another comment.
That's a really hot take.
That every AC/DC record sounds again, use your ears. Listen to them. And the other record, though, was Sabbath, Paranoid, fourth grade. That was just kind of like, you know, I was young, but my dad was just showing me the stuff. And then sixth grade was Porcupine Tree and Dream Theater. That's when he was like, I found this Porcupine Tree band. I found Dream Theater, and then he found Porcupine Tree. And the one, I have two little quick things about this. The Porcupine Tree thing is he would go to, again, I inherited this addiction for like just buying records from him. And he went to Walmart. He went to Borders, Walmart, wherever, record stores. And he asked the guy at Walmart, because back then they had a ton of music, honestly. He asked the guy at Walmart, he had long hair.
I remember this guy.
Beard. Yeah, guy was awesome. He asked him, do you know who Porcupine Tree is? Do you guys have any Porcupine Tree? The guy came from behind the counter and hugged my dad. He said, oh, someone knows who Porcupine Tree is. And my dad got a little freaked out. Like, come on, man. I was a stranger. I was like, come on, man. Just, you know, I just want to know. But he actually went back to that guy fed my dad music recommendations a lot. Because he would go back to that Walmart, be like, Porcupine Tree guy told me to check out this band. And some stuff was a little too heavy for him. Like, that's how I did Opeth. Because, you know, he essentially, we found out about Dream Theater, Porcupine Tree. It's the early stages of us going on the internet. We found out that website, progarchives.com, and it just set us on like a rabbit hole. And that was in the days of illegally, that was, you weren't streaming music, you were buying.
You were stealing it, buddy.
Or stealing it.
You were stealing it and giving it away.
So much that my dad was
the LimeWire days.
Buying. But like all the heavy stuff, we were just downloading.
Yeah.
And we had Zunes. We all had Zunes. So we didn't have iPods, we had Zunes. And you could just drag the stuff from your friend's library to your Zune, and it's
I was in the Zune camp myself.
Yeah, he's initiated. Yeah. He knows what's up.
Yeah, and so like that's how we did. That's how we discovered Opeth, who are now from then on became my favorite band. Still are.
Cynic, Death,
Between
Cynic,
the Buried and Me,
Meshuggah,
and then. The smaller, the Red Chord, and then we go see these bands when they came around. Black Dahlia Murder, I saw Black Dahlia Murder. Oh, this band called Trap Them opening up. Then you know they became one of my favorite bands. You go see Trap Them. This band's opening up, and it's just like you just keep digging and digging and digging. And that's just heavy music, and that's just heavy music. Like
what was
forget
the question?
About everything else.
I totally forgot.
That's the I forget the question too. Yeah,
that's okay. The tangents are our favorite thing on this show. I think the question was like sort of your entry band into heavy music.
Right. So and, there you go. Yeah.
But no, that was awesome. Sort of spinning off of that, you know, you've named a lot of bands that I think some of them, especially sort of the last chunk of bands that you started naming there, like Cynic, Between the Buried and Me, are bands that you guys can. I feel like I would name them as influences on your music that you make today. So definitely. I think the question now, I think what I would pose would be, who do you consider your biggest influences?
I mean, right now or like starting the band?
Give us a progression. Give us a progression. Yeah.
I mean, it was always very gradual and very, very like natural. Like Mike said, the band's roots before it was even called what it is now was Dream Theater and stuff like that. And then I think a big turning point was the Opeth, Between the Buried and Me, Dillinger sort of like and Converge too. Like that quad of bands, it seemed like really like shaped what the band would become, because we got really interested in, you know, we loved the progressive polished stuff, but that stuff was so much heavier, all of it, than Dream Theater or like Symphony X or whatever, which we weren't really listening to a whole lot of, but that world, but like, so this was like it was scratching that sort of like pissed off, probably maybe not the right word, but the angsty itch that kids have, and it gave us this dissonance that we were craving, with the complexity and the sort of like thought-provoking nature of the stuff like Dream Theater. So those like four bands I'd say like just became the the basis for what the band's original sound formed as. And then as it went, it just started just in every direction you could go. I mean, it was jazz stuff, it was fusion stuff, it was pop stuff, it was hip hop stuff, like whatever it could be, it is now. And especially with the stuff that we're currently writing and demoing, it's so much more experimental than I think anyone, you know, would. I don't want to say that anyone would expect. I think our fans come to expect things like that from us, because it's just, that's kind of the name of the game with what we do. But it certainly is making the other influences that are non-metal much more apparent than ever.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's now I look for ideas for music in legitimately everything, and every type of music. And to be honest, like, the thing that I've been most infatuated with is like the tonality of heavier music, or kind of the stuff that you'd expect with mixed with structure or sensibilities from pop music, whether it is more straightforward pop music like Taylor Swift, or more experimental pop music like you know, Caroline Polachek, or 100, they're not 100 Gex guys, but I like 100 Gex, like just stuff that's like stuff that pushes the boundaries, or just like it's stuff that like the same reasons I like Taylor Swift, the same reasons I like Porcupine Tree. If that sounds stupid, it's one of those things where it's like, I just saw Stephen Wilson post a video today of him talking about ABBA, Taylor Swift, and some other.
He's a huge pop guy. Huge pop guy.
Oh, yeah. And so it's like, I don't feel crazy. And not only do I not feel crazy, but I'm sure that somewhere along the line,
super normal, man, I swear.
I essentially stole that from, you know, Stephen's thing was like, ABBA's the best band in the world. Yeah. That was his thing. It's like, I like all of these. I love Pink Floyd, but I love ABBA too. And that's the attitude that I'm coming out so much music with as well. On top of the jazz stuff that I've become infatuated with.
Well, there's a really cool like thing that I've always been fascinated with, which is like what Mike kind of touched on, was finding ways to like, I like to break down, and Mike does too, what makes the average person like pop music. It's usually something that's catchy or what have you. And then how do I take the elements of the music that I love and apply that logic to it in a way? And two records that come to mind, that for me anyway, that were formative for me, that I think draw on that, Trace and Air by Cynic, there's a couple songs that are a little longer, but not too many of them. Not that I think that's in any way, shape, or form a problem, but those songs, every single song on that album feels like it's 2 minutes long. It goes by so fast. It is like unbelievably catchy, and yet if you try to learn one of the songs, you're like, there's so much going on here, and yet you don't hear the song, that's not a chore. You're not like, holy shit, like this keeps you know, ripping me in every direction, I can't keep my head around it. It's just like you're listening to what feels like a song, and then like when you really like, you know, peel back the layers, you're like, holy shit, there's so much going on here. I thought that was that way for progressive music. And then when I got into death metal, I thought the Faceless's Planetary Duality had that same quality to it, despite being an incredibly heavy death metal record. It is by far one of the heaviest and catchiest records I know in that world. It's just like the same thing. The structure of the songs always seems to wrap around in a way where every riff is like singable, but it's death metal. It doesn't have that like tech death riff style thing where it's like, I can't really hear the riff, but it's like every note is super intelligible, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. So that's a huge thing for us.
That's something that I feel like is undervalued or underappreciated in the genre. Or maybe just people don't realize that there are a lot of bands that I feel like try to structure their music like that. And usually the albums that stick with you the most are albums that have those catchy riffs, or, you know, are taking from other genres. Like, probably the earliest record that I can think of in this vein would be, well, I guess not the earliest, but the one that's popping in my head is Deliver Us by Darkest Hour. I don't know if you're familiar, but that record
I'm familiar with the band, just never looked at the record.
I definitely have seen them like twice, I think.
That record to me has a lot of those elements to where, like you said, you're almost seeing the riffs. It sounds simple, it's short, it's like it's not even short, like you don't realize, like it just flows so well that like, I don't know. It's one of those records that sticks with you just because of the writing style and how they pull from elements of different, you know, more popular, genres and things like that.
And the other fun bit about that, the other balance I have in my brain is when you write a more catchier or a poppier song, then my brain goes, now I need to zag. I need to do something like very heavy, very dissonant, like I need to
counter
like,
it
one for one. I just to like and have them connect in some kind of sensible way melodically or just any kind of theme or anything like that.
Right.
That it doesn't sound like the one thing is as much as we're grabbing so many different artists and bands that we love and different genres. The one thing that I don't like is when it sounds like a band is skipping
smashing
through
it.
Genres,
yeah.
Where it's like one after another after another after another. I think that like there's a technical precision that comes with pulling that off. That's like, you know, when they do it live or even a studio recording, that's like, oh, that's impressive. It's just not what I strive to do or what I really like.
Yeah.
I want it to sound cohesive. I want it to sound like just cohesive. I guess
you
want to
beat the genre change over someone's head.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And there's even a time and a place where you can turn on a dime and something can sound natural.
Does it pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say the hoedown in Answer the Sky is a great way to say.
I was literally going to say, like, so would you say that Between the Buried and Me, a band who sort of surfs genres within an album, is like
yes.
a band that does that cohesively?
Yes,
like,
I think
yeah.
so.
They do it cohesively.
They do it perfectly.
They sound like Between the Buried and Me when they're doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and also, you know, you can even look at, like, the note structure of, like, that
right.
fun hoedown part, and then the parts that immediately precede it and are right after it, and it all flows perfectly. You're like, yeah, like, you don't realize how much of music comes down to the tools being used, and sometimes not just the note choice, because, you know, what is metal but just classical music play really fast with distorted guitars and blast beats half the time? Like, what is necrophage? It's neoclassical. It's fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And what is, like, you take that hoedown part and you know, they're kind of using, like, this twangy banjo type sound, and then immediately followed by, like, what I believe they describe as, like, a sort of power metal part almost. But, like, the key and everything lines up in such a way where you're like, yeah, those parts make perfect fucking
yeah,
sense.
It flows
together.
It works.
The tools yeah. are different, you know?
It's like when you cool. describe it, you sound like a psychopath. It's like, it makes
yeah,
perfect
right.
sense. And then people listen to it like, oh, yeah, it kind of does.
No, it doesn't.
And yeah. Prog rock bands do that well, too. And that's like, that's the thing. That's probably why they're able to do that so well. It's because there's a couple guys in that band that love prog rock. Whether it's like King Crimson does with Speed, interestingly enough, where I feel like there's a lot of slower stuff that almost sounds completely different from you play the same thing bumped up, double the BPM. It sounds like two different songs, but it still sounds like King Crimson. Or just even the different tonalities that they play with, or a band like Gentle Giant. You know, Rush to a certain extent. Rush to a certain extent in the 80s, like, as much as one of the genres of music I don't jive with so much is, like, ska and reggae. That's one thing that they melded into their music pretty seamlessly. You yeah. could, if you really listen out,
Spirit of the Radio's got the reggae part right in the middle.
Oh yeah,
perfect.
And it sounds like Rush.
Lands
right?
perfectly. Yeah,
sounds like Rush. Doesn't sound. You wouldn't think unless you really put your ear to it.
Yeah. It's just the song.
Yeah.
It's just how the song goes. That's how you think about it. And you're
yeah.
like, you know, that is a reggae part, but I never thought of it as one. It's just like it's in the song. You know.
Yep.
And for me,
yep.
like those are things that I didn't think about back when I was introduced to Rush by my dad when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah,
you know what I mean? I just was like, this is cool. This sounds cool. I dig this. And then like
I
when
like
you start
this.
When you start getting into bands like Between the Buried and Me, and then you start to look back at like how did I get here? And then you start thinking about, oh, I guess it kind of makes sense. Like I was listening to bands that did a lot of similar shit back then. I just didn't realize
yeah.
it. And,
right.
Like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, there's like our bass player just flying in right now.
Nice.
He's gonna fuck off. yeah.
But yeah, no, that's awesome. That's really cool. I was curious. So you guys, speaking of Between the Buried and Me, I think maybe we can take a dive a little bit into the touring aspect. You guys just toured with them in Haken, I believe. Was that over in
yep.
Europe?
Yep.
I'd love to any cool stories about that. How was that? Was that your biggest
first
tour, you'd say?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It was definitely the biggest tour. I think the first fun story about that is how we got it. It was something that was I'd say very mildly brought to our attention by our agent in Europe. It was very like, hey, like they're looking to tour over here. Your name's in the hat, which is something that does not happen infrequently with this type of thing. You know, you'd be surprised how many things your name gets put into and how few of them actually turn out to
sure.
be real.
Oh yeah, you'd go insane.
Yeah,
if
you'd go nuts.
You don't even want to know about half the stuff.
You stop getting excited after a while. You're just like, oh, that'd be cool. All
right. Right.
Oh, Megadeth. Oh, it's just funny. We actually did get submitted for a Megadeth tour once. That's how funny this shit is.
Oh, that's really cool.
Like, it's not. It's nearly not. it never had a fighting chance. I think.
Who's the one?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know who the? So we got submitted for 104, Megadeth, Trivium, Lamb of God, and there was a 104 they were looking for. Just guess what band? Guess what band beat us and 8 million other bands out for? In Flames.
In Flames.
So obviously we never had a.
So yeah, that's quite a large band.
It's the kind of shit that just like, oh, we're submitting you for this. And you're like, cool. You may as well have like I don't know, like submitted us for a Taylor Swift tour. Like, there's an equal chance of it happening. But with the Between the Buried and Me thing, obviously it was much more feasible than that, but still something that you hear somewhat frequently. And you're like, okay, yeah, that's cool. And he's like, yeah, they're looking to make a decision next like month or two or whatever. When I say we completely forgot about it, I mean like we almost completely forgot about it. We were just like, okay. But since there's a time difference, obviously, where they're much further ahead over there in Europe, and because of the European tour, that's when this stuff gets sorted out. We got the email sent to us, the offer from the agent for the tour at like something like 4 o'clock in the morning, right, or whatever. So Mike wakes up first for the gym at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I happen to be getting up around like, I don't know, 7:30, something like that day. And I wake up to my phone exploding at like 5:45 in the morning, just going apeshit. And I'm like, what is going on? And it's like, I see like 100,000. I thought someone died. And Mike texted me probably 25 times. It's like, Scott, pick up your fucking phone. Look at your phone. Check the man's email. I was like, what is happening? And I just seeing like all capital letters, like tore off or, you know, Between the Buried and Me and Haken. And I was like, nah, I'm going back to bed. It's not real.
The other thing, you know, but, and I do think that at a certain point, we also, I knew that we were, you know, we're bound to take steps, and this was a logical step.
This wasn't like completely out of the question. It wasn't like we were touring like, you know, Dickhead's Bar and Grill, and then that was the next thing that happened. It was certainly a logical
interval.
Yeah, and, but then it just know. Like it still felt like it was a good, a sizable thing. You know,
it's a big step up, and we were psyched about it.
So that was funny, and then like everyone in the band subsequently starts waking up, right? Then like all the text messages. But yeah, it was really cool. It was exciting.
The other thing that I remember about that was just waking up to it, and I got the message from our agent, and he was just like, I've got it. I just sent you a very interesting email. And I was like, I remember the Between the Buried and Me tour. I was like, oh, this is the Between the Buried and Me tour is offering. I don't know why. I was like, yeah, I know this is it. So the thing that I remember about it too is I get the email and I'm looking at the dates and I just keep scrolling.
That was long. It was fucking long. It was 7 weeks almost. About six and a half. Yeah.
How many shows were there?
I was like seven? 40 something.
Oh, holy either way. It was a lot.
I didn't realize it was that huge.
It was gigantic.
It was crazy. Just about as extensive as you can get in Europe.
Yeah. Wow. It covered pretty much every place there was to go.
Yeah, yeah.
More or less. I mean, not like everything, but like, I'd say the major markets were all hit. There was nothing left.
That's a massive tour. Yeah. I feel like, and when I saw that lineup, I was like, good for them, because that makes sense. Like, yeah. I always, and I don't know if this is not meant to be offensive. This is actually a very...
I'm already offended, so watch that.
I always describe your music as like organized chaos. Like, yeah, I feel like you guys do so much within one, you know, piece of music, and it sounds like chaos, but like so cohesive that it's like it's actually impressive. I honestly think you guys are pretty unique in the genre, because you know, there's a lot of bands that you know, Between the Buried and Me is one of them. There's a lot of bands that sort of blend different genres and, you know, take you on a roller coaster ride, but I feel like the way you guys do it is very unique to the genre. So like seeing you on a bill with Between the Buried and Me, I feel like that had to have opened you guys up to like a lot of people who would be, you know, target consumers of your music.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting
it. It felt like just like shooting fish in a barrel at a certain point. Yeah. It was like, this is it for us. These are the people that are going to love us. And like, that was true. But I'll tell you what's kind of funny about it is like, so over here anyway, I'd say that they are probably like one of the biggest like bands in this genre, certainly. I mean, to me, much bigger, at least in America anyway, than Haken was. I was relatively new to Haken. I knew all about them. I just never really listened. It wasn't something I ever really got my ears around. Now I'm dyed in the wool. I fucking love that band.
Yeah, they're awesome. Great.
But yeah, so then we get there though, and come to find out, just because of the way Europe appreciates like prog metal, especially the sort of classic prog metal stuff, it was very much like Haken is fucking huge there, man. Yeah. Like they
I'm not
were
surprised
clearly
by that.
The band that like a lot of the crowd was there to see. It was funny, man. Like, I mean, obviously, BT Band was drawing as zillions of kids too, but it definitely was a lot more even or even tilted in Haken's favor than I expected. And it was
like almost like it could, I was gonna say almost like it could have been a co-headliner.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
It absolutely. Yeah. They played even sets, and Haken played last every night, but that was just because somebody has to. But the sets were even, the billing was even, everything was even.
Part of that being too that Haken released a record on the tour too. It was like, you know, one of those things.
That's when that's when Fauna came out.
Yeah,
we were out there when that came out. It was fun. Yeah. It was a fun little day. I remember they had someone bake them a cake with the Fauna cover.
Oh, yeah. And they were wearing the, like, matching shirts and shit. Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Dude, they still do it, man. They committed to that shit. They did an American tour after that. We caught them on and they were still doing it. They did some festivals after. They're still doing amazing. It. Like, they've evolved it. I think they made t-shirts now because I think, like, Ray was getting a little, like, clammy with the shirt open.
Oh,
and
everything. I can see that.
But, yeah, it was cool, man. Like, it felt nice to get a recognition that, like, as arrogant as it sounded, that we felt like we deserved after grinding it for so many years. And it felt like this was the audience that we've been wanting to get in front of. And it felt like a reward for, like for playing in front of a lot of audiences that we probably didn't belong in front of, but that we're always open to doing that kind of thing because I think it's really helpful and healthy to do that. But it felt like, okay, we're coming home now. Like, this is like a homecoming for the band in a way where it's like, if anyone's going to like us, it's these people. So let's do it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And I mean, just as far as stories go, I mean, the one thing that sticks out is just like, one, how easy to get along with both of those bands are.
Yes.
You never know going into a tour, especially because, you know, we've toured with a few bands that that we grew up listening to and liking. And I think in pretty much every case, we've been lucky.
Yeah.
But like, we got along with Between the Buried Me better than any band that we've ever toured with. Like that, like as good as
As good as anyway. You know, yeah.
As good as Raul Tomasi or
Intervals or anybody.
I remember seeing was it Dan or was it Tommy or he was wearing your jacket?
Actually, is that the jacket? That's the jacket. Actually, you can see it hanging on the chair.
But you know what it is? It's one of those things where that was earlier on in the tour and we were still like, they were so kind and so nice and so pro is the other thing too.
Yeah.
But just like in a way that was like
just relaxed.
Yeah.
Not intimidating at all.
That's a good word. Yeah. And then we were on stage and Tommy warmed up in our dressing room most nights. And I got like I just got a DM from him of him wearing my coat. Like no and I was just, it was one
just
of those things
context,
where
no context,
where I was like, we're becoming friends. This is nice.
Yeah.
And you have those moments on all tours where it's like you start to get to know people and then something happens where someone says or does something and you're like,
okay, now we're friends.
We're friends. Yeah. You know, now we're friends with these guys.
And they make it easy to, you know, like Paul's a great A. Paul Wagner's a great A ball buster. He's a roaster in every sense of the word, where you kind of like, you know, pleasantries for a couple of days. And then on day three, he's like making fun of your shoes or something. And you're like, all right, like, it's nice because it creates a very relaxed atmosphere immediately. And you go, okay, no one has to be a tight ass. We can all just hang out and you can give it back to me. He takes it like anybody else. So it's cool.
And same thing with Haken. And it's just nice to, not every band that you tour with, you stay in touch with and become lifelong friends with. But it's nice when you do become like there's a lifelong friendship that you see. And like, you know, we're still I still talk to a couple of the guys in Between the Mary and Me every day, every other day. It's, you know,
that's awesome.
Every week or something. It's, you know,
that's cool.
Buddies. And you know, Haken the same way. Intervals is, you know,
some of our
Baltimore. Like, it's just bands like, you know, you just meet people and you're like, oh, this is your friend now.
Yep. Yeah. It's great.
So it was just, you know, there's no insane stories just because they're so pro. And every show was just like, we hung out, ate food, played music, and then everyone went to bed.
One fun one was
a couple little things.
I'm thinking about in Barcelona. Barcelona, I think it was. And I remember going outside the show for a minute to get some air, food, or something. And I came back, and BT Band was playing. And, like, I just realized that, like, nothing's happening. There's, like, some weird, like, Jazz Odyssey type vibe happened. I'm like, what the fuck is going on in there? Like, you know, like most bands, they have their session that they play through the sets the same every night. It's not like fucking improv jazz goddamn thing. And I'm looking and I'm like, and I just see like this image of like Paul Wagner standing on stage starting a stand-up comedy routine while like their engineer, their sound guy Nate, just looks visibly stressed out with a flashlight. And Tommy Rogers kind of in the back of the stage looking like he wishes he could disappear. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And something like just completely shit the bed in their rig and they couldn't play. And they're like, there's like Dan and Blake were just goofing around. Paul's like making fun of people in the crowd and his own band and everything. And I'm like, this is a really good way to handle this. And it felt like a little bit of a learning experience where it's like, you can't take the shit too seriously. There's nothing you could do about it when something goes wrong, but wait it out. They could have stood there in total silence while the crowd got like restless and were like, what the hell's going on? And instead they're like, all right, time to just command this crowd with a weird little jazz beat and I'll make fun of stuff for a little while. You know? Paul making fun of Haken for being wasted on the boat and like this, like stuff like that, you know. it's very, like Mike said, it's like the stories are not extreme because it was just a good time and everybody was just good. The tour was good, the show's been good, everybody's cool.
I got one other fun one is the we went to Taco Bell that one night.
Oh yeah,
where we were walking
the exotic food of Taco Bell.
We were in Spain.
It wasn't
Barcelona. It was
somewhere in Spain.
It was the other one, Sevilla. That's the one. I got Sevilla. It. We avoided any good Spanish food and went to Taco Bell.
And it was just one of those things where I was
going to say, you got that authentic Spanish food.
Yeah. Me and Scott were just by our trailer or something like that. Like, I forget what, but a couple of guys in between the bear and me were walking out. And I think it was Paul who was just, come on, we're going to Taco Bell. Come on, we're going to Taco Bell. Come on.
Didn't get a choice.
Yeah, you didn't have a choice. He was just like, we're going. He was like, and you know, it was one of those things that was, again, an early-ish on in the tour.
About 2 weeks in, something like that.
Two out of seven. Good, but that was, you know, it was nice to just have, everyone was so friendly and welcoming, and it was nice. It was a great, great tour full of days like that.
Yeah, and great shows.
And great shows. Really no great bad shows. Shows
really really good shows.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I actually, I ended up discovering you guys on your Veil of Maya tour.
Oh yeah,
When you we're from Pittsburgh, so when you came through Pittsburgh,
Mr. Small's Theater.
It was at Mr. Small's Theater, yeah. Yes, sir. One of our favorite venues on the podcast. We love it. And honestly, of all the bands that played that night, your set stuck out to me the most. I am a huge Between the Buried and Me fan. They're one of my favorite bands. So like,
same, yeah.
I really drew the parallel. To what you guys were doing and kind of what I liked about what Between the Buried and Me did. So immediately it was like, grabbed a shirt, grabbed a vinyl, loved everything you guys did.
Appreciate
Love that. And then to the point where I told Matt about you guys, and then we ended up catching you on the Intervals tour when you came through Pittsburgh. And so the question is,
Smalls again, was it?
No.
Was it? No, wait. Don't tell me. Oh, was it fucking Jurgles?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. How did I forget?
Because we
the weirdest show ever.
We talked that night.
Yeah, we did.
Yep, but I wanted to bring that up because I felt like everybody on that tour had a lot of fun with the fact that it was at Jurgles.
We couldn't not, man. Yeah, that name is fucking ridiculous.
You created a meme. I think you guys tweeted it out where it was like a bottle of Jergens lotion or something.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I changed it to Jurgles.
Oh, we loved that so much.
There, it was a game that the whole tour package was playing.
Yeah. Who can say Jurgles?
Oh, who can say Jurgles on stage the most?
Yeah.
I love that you guys remember this shit.
We couldn't help but feel like toward the end, the Intervals was cheating because they were just like saying it 10 times before a song. I guess they were making up for the fact that they didn't have words in the songs.
Yeah.
I had one disqualified because the tour manager, Justin, was counting on the side of the stage. And I want to disqualify because I changed a lyric in the song to Jurgles. And he said, if no one can understand it because you're screaming, it doesn't count. And I thought that was garbage because we tied with Seder after that. And we would have won by one. Dude, I felt like I just lost the Stanley Cup, man. I was so pissed.
It was Jurgles per minute, too.
Yeah, JPM.
Because it wouldn't be fair to us and Seder.
Yeah, we felt like we had shorter sets. It's not fair, you know, for them. Like, if Intervals got an hour, they can say Jurgles 100 times in an hour.
We did.
You know what? Thank you scientists, I think they won and they deserved to.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they probably did.
They were pretty creative, but they did like a little acapella, you know. they're that type of bands.
The funny thing about Jurgles too is like that was not just a joke that day. We remember like I was looking through the venue list as you typically do when you get a tour offer. You're like, yeah, I've been there, played that. Oh, that's a new one, that's a cool one. I heard of that place, I've never been there. And then I hit Jurgles and I'm like, what the fuck is, like, I've never even seen it on a tour fly. I've never heard of Jurgles. And I'm like, no, Mr. Small. Okay, that's a little weird. But then we get there, and of course, everyone's laughing at the name the whole time, like up leading. And that was toward the end of the tour. That was like, there's like four shows left out of like a month of tour on that one. And we get there, and the vibe of that place is exactly what a place called Jurgles should look like. And that's like a two-story Applebee's.
Yeah,
that's exactly like, what
we're eating, like fucking like zesty like jalapeno slammers while we're playing. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
It's being from the area. Have you been to Jurgles since? Is that a spot
So let me tell you. So Jurgles is usually the go-to spot for your favorite dad rock cover band.
Yeah. All the flyers in a place where, like, dude, the guitar player from like Zebra is playing here on Saturday.
I was gonna go Zebra too. That's so and Long Island band.
Legends, yeah.
Yeah.
And yes. it usually draws a very geriatric crowd. and the funny part about that is, so like they have like membership, like I want to say memberships or something like that, like people can like so like they, you know, oh, you can come to all the shows or whatever. And so I knew that you guys were opening, right? I don't know if you caught some of the crowd by the bar.
People were eating burgers and stuff.
Yeah. But there were several members of the like Silver Sneakers community in the crowd for your set, and I was like these people don't know what they're about to witness. Like they're last week it was like a Nickelback cover band or some shit, and now they're about to experience this. Like
it's funny that we can upset, and not like really upset, but we can make two so polar opposite demographics upset when we play. And that's the like when we're playing with, you remember that deathcore? Like we used to play with deathcore bands when we were younger.
Yeah,
because that was
it was like whatever was heavy, you would play with.
What was the metal fest?
It
was, go?
Okay, so it was the New England Metal and Hardcore Festival in 2016. They were doing a pre-show, like a warm up in Connecticut the day before, where I guess a handful of bands that were either on their way to the festival or local or what have you were playing the day before the festival as well. And the guy who's putting it together, big deathcore death metal guy, but he also loves us. Why, I don't know, but he's really big on it. You know, he's probably got a very expanded taste, and he loved our band, and he loved those other types of bands. And there's nothing wrong with any of these bands, but it was seven deathcore bands and us.
And so the second
and we weren't even playing first. We were like fourth. You know, we were like deaths like in the middle of this lineup. It was actually Jeremy's first show at the band ever.
Oh my god, yeah.
So I was like, this is a good way to get your feet wet, cuz you're not going to be nervous at all, cuz like it's like the dead, like everyone just looking at us. And
it's maybe the only time that we've ever played where after a song, not a single person clapped.
Nobody.
And was just after one song. Like,
yeah, you know, later on it picked up. It was the first track we played, and then like we hit the last note, and you're like, there's like that expectation. You hit the note, there's like a half second of silence, and then here comes the noise, and it was like, and then just like the way you could hear a pin drop.
It was legitimately so funny. I'll never forget it.
I think I looked at Mike and just like mouthed like, okay.
It's, you know, the only clean guitars of the night.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else had a channel switcher at all.
Which is fine. It's just a different type of show. No one was, and so to go from that upsetting those people to upsetting the crowd.
Dad Rock. We're either too heavy or not heavy enough, no matter what.
Like, I will say one of those gentlemen was bobbing his head a little bit.
That's awesome. Good for him.
I don't think he knew what was happening, but he was into it.
That's okay. He doesn't have to. I've seen a lot of bands where I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm watching, but I think it's pretty cool, man.
The clean guitars and the prog rock, the undertones of prog rock pull people in, where sometimes you get someone who is just a little bit older and is not versed in this kind of music at all, and they go, you know, I hear a little bit of Rush there. And that's like, we've done that before.
Yeah, it really attracts the, I don't really mind the screaming, I just can't understand what he's saying crowd. Right. Like that's, you know. But I remember that show, and that, I'm glad you brought that up, because I truly did not know when people were sitting there eating dinner and whatever. I'm like, okay, so normally you have to pay to get into a show. These people don't look like they paid to get here. They don't look like they want to be here. And I'm like, how are the bands getting paid? Is anyone buying tickets, or are you just walking for dinner and then at like 6 o'clock now you got to leave? I had no idea how this works. And I'm like, there's no way anyone at these tables paid to be here. Like, but if they're members or whatever, that makes perfect sense. I remember thinking, because this is not like an abnormality, but you know, if there's a smoking section or like an eating section or whatever, and you're playing first, there can be this moment of like, okay, we need to get everyone over here so they know the show's starting. But this was different because you felt like you're in a fish tank, because it's like, you know, square, and everyone's on the perimeter of the square looking at you, but they're all really comfortable with their steak and they're not about to stop eating it. And I'm like, I guess we just play. But it was you know, ended up being a fun experience.
And you'll never forget a show like that.
No. I knew that we were in for it. And this is not necessarily a hard and fast rule, but I knew we were in for it when we had a kid mixing on the iPad.
Yeah.
Whenever you see the iPad broken out, you're like, oh man, this might not be great. Like, you know, like a string bean, the 17-year-old kid who's definitely like, you know, they put him on this show because the real sound guy only likes dad rock, and he's like, I'm not doing the metal show. You go ahead. And he's got this like iPad Pro and he's just like standing on stage mixing. I'm like, no, you got to mix back out there, yeah. Man. You got to.
That is a good rule.
Yeah, you a good rule is mix where people will watch the show, you know?
I just meant the iPad thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not necessarily hard and fast, but it's pretty good. It's a pretty good click. Yeah, where like if you see the iPad broken out, you
might you're in for a bad time.
Yeah, honestly, they've only been they've only had metal shows there, what, Matt, would you say like the last 2 years, 3 years?
Like, yeah, it seemed like they were trying to like change the people that were coming, like try to branch out and make it like, let's just not make this like a geriatric hangout. Let's make it like hipper and cool. They actually had a metal fest where Lorna Shore played there.
Oh wow.
Which was crazy. It was like when I saw that, it was like, but it started like in the afternoon on like a weekday, and it was like, I can't imagine the turnout was
there
real
had
great.
To have been like 10 people there.
Yeah.
That's a strange promoter idea, probably.
Yeah. And like, hey, speaking of good stories, like if you want tour stories at Jurgles, it was such a joke, the whole thing, like the name anyway, not the show. And then we were in our dressing room, which was fucking huge, by the way. It looked like some kind of like VIP, like, I don't know, like private room for like people to have, I don't know, private lunches or whatever. And our drummer is just kind of like rummaging through stuff and he's opening drawers. And I swear he pulls out a embroidered Jurgles polo. And he's like, no. And he looks at the size and it's his fucking size. And he's like, I don't tell anybody, but I'm taking the shirt. And he literally wears the Jurgles shirt sometimes. Yeah, he'll break it out for occasions, like, you know, parties, wearing his Jurgles embroidered polo. It's
actually so amazing.
Wild stuff. Yeah,
I'm so glad that you guys remember that. We both were like, should we ask this? They'll be like,
that
no,
was like one of that was one
about?
Of the that was one of the biggest things whenever you guys said you were gonna do this, where we were like we need to find a way to bring up Jurgles, but we were like, but we would hate if we brought it up and you guys were like, oh, I have no idea. But I'm so glad this spun into like this huge thing,
dude.
It was
every word you could think of was turned to Jurgle. Everybody was like jerking off, like it's not good, man. Yeah, we'll never forget Jurgles.
That's so funny.
A special place in the band's history.
We wish it was hopefully it turns into something better at some point, because that is actually the closest venue to where we live in Pittsburgh. Really? So like if it did work out, that would be amazing, but it's just such a weird vibe right
is
now.
Is there any I have a question for you. Is there any like actual venues, like, I don't know, it sounds weird, but like for metal anyway, inside the actual city limits of Pittsburgh? I feel
Preserving Record Store, that
Preserving Underground. So that is not technically in downtown Pittsburgh. Well, it's considered a Pittsburgh address though. So that's area's New Kensington, PA.
Gotcha.
So it's honestly Smalls is closer to downtown Pittsburgh.
It feels like every time that we play Pittsburgh on a tour, it's never, the address is never Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
it's always like Millvale or something. Yeah. Like, is there any venue inside Pittsburgh? Like, so, we pull up and we see the bridges and we're like, oh, it's so cool looking. And then like, there's always this hilarious moment in the van where you like veer off. And you're like, oh, actually, we're not going there. Like, oh, bye. We're gonna go to the suburbs. See you later.
There's a slightly larger venue called Stage AE.
Okay.
That is on the North Shore of Pittsburgh. So when you're out, like you're right next to Heinz or Acrisure Stadium, whatever the hell it is now.
Sure, yeah.
So you're between the two stadiums. So you're between Acrisure and PNC Park.
Nice.
It's like an indoor outdoor too. Like they can set up the stage either
yes.
way.
So if you're playing outdoor on the stage, you're looking at Heinz Field or Acrisure Stadium.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So that's a venue that I've seen Animals as Leaders there. I've seen Sick. Between the Buried and Me there. Coheed and Cambria plays there every time they come through. Okay. So
I mean, we'll
hit that.
What you're saying is we need to get on a bigger tour in America.
you can get there. I mean, I feel like that Between the Buried and Me Haken like tour
that would have hit
with
there.
You guys. Yeah, I think that would have hit there.
Yeah,
I saw Death Haven there.
Yeah,
I've seen them there twice.
Wasn't that BT BAM, Animals as Leaders, Contortionist show?
Yeah, that was at Stage AE indoors.
2015. Yep. That was a great show.
It was a good show.
It was a really good
show. You have a good memory. I can't remember.
So I have a weird thing with dates and like shows specifically. Like our drummer's always like, he'll always like pull up to place and be like, have we played here before? And I'm like, four times actually, yeah. Like we play here on every. I don't know how you don't know that.
Matt, what's the smaller venue in Lawrenceville that Caligula's Horse is playing at?
Is it Thunderbird?
Yeah, there's a spot called, I think it's called the Thunderbird Music Cafe or something like that. Oh, that's like
a bad sign.
Yeah, whenever you see but it's actually, grill or cafe, you're in trouble.
I thought the same thing, but the venue, like, I've never actually been there. This will be the first time I ever go next year. Will be for Caligula's Horse, but it seems like it looks normal from the pictures. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Sure. We'll see what that's like. But that's also
relatively they have a green room.
City.
You don't like go in the kitchen or anything. So there's at least that.
Hey, our green room's been in the kitchen more than once. Yeah. What was that place we just did with Rollo and Dad Boys over there?
Chicago.
That was in
Pittsburgh.
It was
in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. What the hell is that called?
What the hell is the weird place? But like the marquee
the Craft House.
The Craft House. Really Craft was House. It? Craft House.
Yes.
Yeah. Was that? Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So
that was also odd, kind of a restaurant
odd spot, man. Really odd spot. I remember that.
There's two things I remember very much about that day. Do you remember either?
One of them was the Dad Boys' tire flying off their bus and like counting. Hitting another car, and I had to go pick them up. And they made their show by about 6 minutes. So,
wow. Oh geez.
The weird pizza.
There's a weird pizza spot that a few of us went to that was honestly
went to that.
Great. And then the toothpaste.
Oh man! So we
shared a van with. I want to know what the weird pizza place was too. But
it
was
right across the street. I mean, it might not be that weird. We might be being offensive right now, but for us, from where we are, like it was odd. I don't know how to describe it. It's very.
Is it the spot that puts the cold cheese on it?
No, but that is yeah. We actually have a spot that does that here
tomorrow.
But not. It's not normal here at all. How much so that the one place that does it is the one place that does it, right? Yeah, I don't think it was that place in Pittsburgh. It was just I don't know. It was just. Whatever, but Rollo Tomasi is the band we were out with. They're probably our best friends in music, and we were sharing a van with them as we like to in America. And they're from England, and it's the best time. You can't have a better time on tour than sharing a van with that band. It's just like a party, not even like a party. Like everyone's going nuts.
It's a weird.
It's like a fun little innocent party.
People are playing War. People are playing dice.
Yeah. Last time we did this tour, they brought a router with them so they can like set up like a little local network in the van so they can play this like I don't know, what. Command and Conquer Red Alert. That was the actual game. But they just called it War.
They just call it War. Who wants to play War?
Who wants to go to war? Yeah.
All right.
And their drummer, Al, forgot his toothpaste. And it was only a two-week tour.
No, Nathan forgot the toothpaste.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, he's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, Nathan forgot his toothpaste, their bass player. And he kept grubbing off their drummer, Al. And it's only a two-week tour. And after like a day or two, Al was like, all right, get your own toothpaste, man. Like, I'm going to run out of toothpaste. I'll buy it again. And then Nathan just kept just taking it anyway. So then, well, I guess Al, when he was drinking one night, he just put his foot down. He's like, no more, not taking my toothpaste. That's it. You're done. No more toothpaste. So the next day at Craft House outside.
There's this hill.
Have you been to Craft House? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, one time,
that fucking gigantic hill that it's on.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, so we're parked at the top by the back door or whatever. And like Nathan just, like, he steals Al's toothpaste out of his bag. Like, knows exactly where it is, obviously, because he keeps using it. And he goes, Mike, take a video of this. And he goes, this is what Al gets for being so selfish. And he puts it on the ground like a football tee and and just absolutely punts this toothpaste like a full fucking 50 yarder down this massive hill. And at the very moment that he is recoiling from this kick, Al walks out of the venue and everyone's peeing. He's like, what's everyone laughing at? We're like, I will have to. We'll have to send you the video.
I'd love to see that.
It is exactly
funny.
As I described. The timing is like you would think it was scripted with how
it's insane.
As soon as he kicks it, like Al walks out.
Yeah,
yeah. We have a couple of good Pittsburgh memories.
Oh,
I guess.
Man,
yeah, that's awesome. It. Glad to hear that they're good ones, not bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. I like Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I like Pittsburgh. I like Sid.
Hockey guys. So
I like Sid. I like Gino.
Yeah, game on.
Oh yeah.
It's on commercial.
I saw some hockey going on back there.
Yeah,
Patrick Kane's playing his first game for the Red Wings, so, and the Islanders are on after this too.
Oh, I was already on.
Yeah, you guys are big Isles fans. I knew
big
that.
Islanders. And well, me and Mike are the other guys are big hockey guys, but
Abs too. Abs as well.
That's my second team too.
Oh, really?
Yep. I grew up. I was a big Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, that whole era.
They were just the
Forsberg.
Best. So, yeah.
I grew up. My favorite player was Forsberg, so they're my team, and I love the Islanders too. I love them both. I love them both equally. is what I said.
You just backtrack. He gets in a lot of trouble in our Islanders group chat for being a double fan. And he just said, they're my team, and then caught himself and then went, no,
second team.
Yeah, he does this all.
I wouldn't call them my, I would not call the Avalanche my second team.
No.
You probably have my Broncos shirt on. I'm a Denver guy.
Yeah.
Denver. Not from Denver. I just gravitated towards Pierre Forsberg. But I love the Islanders too.
I was a big Patrick Waugh guy. I don't know why. Back then.
Great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and back then I played a lot of NHL on like PS2. NHL. Like
That's where my love of hockey came from too, was
just
from playing the video games first and then being like, oh, there's actually a sport.
And you just could not score on Patrick Waugh. So I was like, that's my shit. This is my team. I love it.
And great, and the personality too.
He has quite a fiery personality.
Yeah, it's
fun. Fought three goals on the Red Wings.
I love that famous video of him like making a crazy glove save and he winks to the mask. Like, it's like a cartoon. He's awesome.
It's fucked him before too.
Yeah, he's made some goofy like glove saves that landed in front of him. He thought he had.
I'll never forget his first game coaching.
He's knocking the stanchion down between him and Bruce Boudreau,
screaming at each other, and Bruce Boudreau's coaching the Ducks. And you know, that's just not run of the course. You don't see that often, but it happens. And then Patrick Waugh slams the glass and it tilts over.
Falls
and
over.
Bruce Boudreau went. He walked. He turned around and walked away.
Yeah,
he was like, "This is fucked. This guy is out of his mind." And it was one of those things where that season was so unreal because he does that the first game of the season. And I remember guys essentially saying halfway through that season, after that season, you go, "You want to run through a wall for that guy because he's doing that."
Sure.
First game of the year.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so two more things before we wrap up, because I know you guys got to take off here shortly. So the first thing I guess there's two. One is we want to talk about a little bit, you know, if you guys have anything that you want to announce, talk about any new music, any you know, new tours, anything like that. And then the other one is just a fun thing that we like to ask bands, like now that we're getting closer to the end of the year too. And that's because one of our biggest episodes we do every year is sort of an album of the year episode.
Sure.
Where we, you know, look at all the releases from this past year and then come up with one. Awesome. So do we.
I keep the same thing. All my stuff, so I'll pull my spreadsheet up and I'll let you know
what's
going on right now.
So I guess let's talk about maybe any new music announcements, anything like that you guys have. I know you dropped a single in 2022, Hyperwealth, and then you dropped another one this year, Tragic.
Yep.
Is that going to be part of a larger collection of music, or what do we got? Those were just one-offs?
Those are just one-offs, and I want to put them out physically as part of, like, you'll see Porcupine Tree is an example of this, where they'll put a record out, and then, you know, side A, side B, side C is the record, and then side D is, like, B-sides, or, like, songs from another, like, Fear of Blank Planet comes with side D being Nil Recurrent,
sure,
that kind
of
thing, where it's, like, we're not going to go out of our way to put a 7-inch out for this thing, but it's one of those things where it's, like, we sign with a label who goes, all right, you get an allotment for, you know, we can put this on two vinyl. And I go, okay, so let's try and put the singles out. So that's the capacity that it'll come out physically. At some point it will, but it'll be part of a larger release, kind of just like bonus tracks.
But those tracks by themselves, cool. I mean, they came out the way they did for a couple of reasons. First one, the no fun, you know, paperwork reason was our contract's over with our last label. So we had this moment where we could have immediately went straight to work on a full-length record, or we kind of wanted to just test the waters of putting something out by ourselves and just see what would happen in the meantime. And the songs felt creatively like something that was falling directly in the middle of what we had done and what we are going to do. And we liked them a lot. We believed them a lot, but it felt very much like they serve as a bridge in our brains. You know, when you hear the songs, it just felt like Hyperwealth lives in its own world. It's so aggressive. It certainly could find its way, or it could have found its way on a record. We love the song, but it has just a self-contained ball of energy that felt proper to just put it out by itself. And Tragic was a song that we all kind of immediately, that was actually the first one that we agreed on when it came to like the idea of putting on a couple singles. Tragic was the one we signed off on first. We're like, yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. It's right. Complete. It does what the band does pretty quickly. And it just, like I said, it felt like I don't want to say the end of an era, but it felt like the closing chapter of what we always felt like we were doing, the best version of what we were doing already, and now it's time to move into something different. And we didn't want to let those songs just disappear because they're awesome. We like them. So
yeah.
It felt like a good way to give ourselves some time to work out sort of the back end stuff, and also just let them see the light of day. Otherwise, if we moved beyond them, maybe they wouldn't have. And so yeah, that was the mentality on those two singles. And then going forward, now we're writing a fuck ton of music, which is what we've been wanting to do for quite a while, but touring just kept coming in, which is a great problem to have. And we never really found the time to sit down as a group and start fleshing out a whole bunch of songs. And I think it probably worked out for the better, because maybe had we had written these the songs that we're now writing a couple of years ago, before we got so much extra touring experience, they may not have come out as good as we think they're coming out now, because we learned so much from seeing these super professional bands that we tour with carry themselves, and the way they like their creative processes, and watching them prepare for shows, watching them play shows, and getting inspired. Like, you know, seeing a band like Hakener, Between the Barrier and Me, just rip the intervals, of course, as well. And I mean, the list could go on forever, but like just seeing the way those bands rip through a 65 minute set with all these emotions and ebbs and flows, and like, you know, slow parts and super big parts and super heavy parts. And we've had this moment, I mean, over time, but certainly came to a head on the Between the Barrier and Me tour, where we were like, we gotta like not write music like either one of these bands, but we need to create, like, it just inspired you to create larger moments.
Yeah,
music, you know, just things that weren't just like, we felt like we were this self-contained ball of energy for 30 minutes, and other bands that we looked up to were creating creating a moment for 65 minutes. And I was like, okay, I want to create a moment too. I want to make people feel things that are maybe a little bit more complex than what we're doing now. So that, I think taking that experience home and then applying it to the songs that we had already begun to write, and then certainly inspire us, I think, to maybe leave a few things in the riff bank and start from scratch on a lot of things in a way. Not that everything was from scratch, but we certainly like felt rekindled to just write a bunch of brand new stuff, as opposed to going like, what have we been working on for a year and a half? You know, like let's start over, almost, not start over, but let's like maybe wipe the slate a little bit clean here.
And not only just that, but maybe write a couple songs that aren't based around riffs and more about musical ideas in general.
Yeah.
Like so many songs that we love are, like, you know, not all music is riff based, and there's still plenty of room for it. More, there's tons, but it makes those riffs stand out so much more when it's not all riffs all the time.
Yeah. So long and short, we're working on a third record that, I mean, every band in the world is going to go on an interview and say, no, it's like their best stuff ever, man. Like, but best is always going to be up to interpretation. But as far as we're concerned, it's the most complete music. And it's certainly, you know, we're not talking a complete 180 in the other direction, oh, but it's still our band, like, without question. But it's
and there's, you know, even if we go through and like complete 4, 5, 6 of these songs already, there's still, you know, as much as I'm loving them, I understand there's still room to grow on future records.
Yeah, and some of the stuff that we already demoed and love might not even make a record, because we might write something in a month that's better. So yeah. We're in this very, I'd say, productive, creative snowball right now.
And fluid.
It's going cool. So it's maybe taking a little longer than we wanted, mostly because of touring, but it's not for a lack of a, you know, we looked at the calendar, the Angel of History turned 3 like 2-3 days ago, and I was like, holy smokes. Yeah, and obviously, so we lost some of that time to COVID for sure.
I would love it if a record came out before it turned 4, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see what goes on, but that's where we're at right now. Actually, what we will be doing as soon as we hang up with you guys, we're gonna start fleshing out a song that Mike and I
showing Jeremy on. A song that me and you worked on. Yeah,
yeah, and if it,
I mean,
it
we could just keep it rolling and while you guys
just day
it'd be down. Very boring for you. It'd be mostly me looping the same 30-second session.
I'd be enthralled.
Yeah, well, I'm glad somebody is. I'm bored most of the time.
So I guess, so what we're saying is, you know, don't expect a full 180, and it's, you know, it's not a complete different direction, but there's some new inspiration there, maybe from what you just experienced overseas.
It's making the house bigger.
Yeah.
It's not knocking the house down, but we are putting a second story on the house.
Definitely. I like that. I like that description.
Yeah.
Very cool. Any new tours or anything like that coming up?
No, we're actually in full on writing mode.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, that's cool. Okay. That's awesome.
We found that we had no choice but to take the time to write, because every time we went, yeah, we'll between that tour and that tour, we'll write. And then, like, for some reason, like, it was hard to get the momentum moving when there's always something to rehearse for and there's always something to prepare for financially and prepare for production-wise and what have you. So it is kind of nice, even though it's kind of driving us all a little stir-crazy because we're not used to it, it is nice to just be like, okay, the only thing this band has to focus on right now is writing songs. Mm-hmm. So no, I think that's probably why the stuff's coming out cool and it's not being rushed, but we are going stir-crazy. So the second a cool offer comes across our table, we'll take it.
Nice, nice. When can we expect to hear a piece of that at all? Is there any?
Your guess is probably better than mine.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Multiple factors.
That doesn't mean it's going to be a long time per se. It just means that I literally don't know.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's perfectly fine. It's
materializing quicker than it did even 2 months ago. So it seems like the snowball is getting bigger and it's rolling downhill. Nice. So it's getting faster. So hopefully sooner than later. But
cool.
Very
that's
cool.
That's exciting.
And now putting you on the spot, album of the year so far. What do you got?
Spreadsheet up.
He's got a crazy spreadsheet, man.
We do the same thing.
I've got one for movies and I've got one for music.
He's probably got 30 minutes on this.
And it doesn't have to be limited to like heavy music either, because I know there's.
Oh, I know.
Okay, cool. Just
it couldn't be.
Because sometimes that it's interpreted that way. You know, oh, you're a heavy music podcast. It has to be heavy, but we're pretty much all over the place.
We're a heavy band that takes very, 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 very personal extended breaks from heavy music.
Sometimes you have to, you know.
Yeah.
Hit the refresh button.
I've got
the thing I had on my Apple Music was Creed. Before I wasn't looking like bored on my phone when we were talking about Creed. I was actually pulling up their album artwork because I think that band is they're a cool band, but man, they have some of the funniest artwork. Like and like through their whole career. Like it's not even like an era. Every Creed album has hilarious album artwork. Unbelievably funny album artwork. So that's why I was pulling up and then we got distracted. But
no, you're good.
I'm looking here. What do we got?
Okay, so and I just want to make sure because I haven't updated the spreadsheet in a second. I've on top of that, I've got a playlist on Spotify where I'm just like, all right, I'm adding, you know, as I go through I limit it to 10, and then I re-listen through everything, and stuff gets moved.
I do the exact same
that's
thing.
Me too.
Yep, yep. It's tough because I'm gonna leave stuff out that I like.
There's no gun to your head here. It's you know it can change.
One to your leg right now, so watch out.
Okay,
just a leg shot, you'll be fine.
All right, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give you my 10 with the I'm gonna give you my 10 as they are right now, and I'll go through them quick. I won't even say anything about any of them.
That's fine.
Front runner for one is what I'll say. The one I'll elaborate on is the front runner for one, which is that new Tomb Mold record, The Enduring Spirit. Is that on your radar?
No, I haven't. I haven't checked that one out yet. I need to.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's honestly just cool progressive death metal. It's really really cool.
Think less Periphery. Well, that's not death metal, but like think less Periphery and more like Obscura death. Cynic,
sweet.
Like
ooh,
that
cool, yeah.
90s vibe, but like
but raw and weird. Awesome. But yeah, there. So that's my front runner is new Tomb Mold record. Then ooh. I've got in no specific order right now, new Paramore record. I think they're an unbelievable band. New Haken record, which to be completely honest, that band was not someone that I really really dove into until we toured with them, and then they just I think it's great. Band that just announced that they broke up a day or two ago, Screaming Females. Their new record is really cool. Got to see them this year. They're great. A record that really grew on me and might challenge for one, Caroline Polachek. She's like I don't want to say experimental, but like kind of like experimental-ish pop music. Suzanne Sundfor. I think she's Scandinavian, but this is a record that I pop on a good bit. It's called Bloomy. Blommy. B-L-O-M-I.
It's like not a podcast.
It's really cool. It's really cool. We'll
have to change our category on podcasts now.
Steven Wilson, Harmony Codex. That's another one that should be top three, no doubt. I think that's probably his best since Hank Not a Race. New No Name record, Sundial, which is my only really big hip-hop release that I love this year. I like that Danny Brown. What's the name of that Danny Brown record? Yeah. I like that new Danny Brown record. But like, you know, admittedly don't listen to hip hop, one of my least listened to genres right now, but I still dive in.
band called Ulthar. They're another death metal band. They put out a double record this year. I have it on the list, and it's one of those things where I like the two releases before this a little bit more. That'll probably get bumped. And then Reverend Kristen Michael Hayter, which is the Lingua Ignota's new identity, I guess you could say, the record Saved. It's really, really cool. It's like gospel. It's gospel chanty shit. It's insane. The record she put out, the last record that she put out under Lingua Ignota, and this one are legitimately insane. And there's like tons more that are on my radar on the spreadsheet, and for different categories. I have Song of the Year, Best Opening Track, Closing Track, tons of stuff like that I just didn't. I can't even get.
He does awards by himself.
I'm by myself with some buddies. I also started doing a podcast. I just had Dan from Between the Bear and Me on, actually.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, nice.
About essentially about movies, talking to musicians about what their favorite movies are. And I am doing an award show for music and movies where it's my own Oscars, my own Grammys. And that's why I keep the spreadsheet. And
What's the name of the podcast just for our listeners?
It's called The Juice, but I need to figure out what's going on with this the search functionality of this name. If you want to find the podcast, honestly, just search The Juice Dan Briggs, because that's the latest episode. Although a new episode's coming out tonight with James from Rollo on The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Very cool.
Ooh, cool.
And Dan's movie was Mulholland Drive, for what it's worth.
Yeah. Very cool.
For me, cool. I don't have a spreadsheet.
Okay, yeah, you go ahead.
And sorry, to be honest, I didn't listen to as much music this year as I wanted to. Probably a symptom of doing so much of our own stuff. I do the engineering, and Jeremy and I do the mixing for all of our demos. So my ears are very fried and cooked, just like, you know, doing that shit all the time. But for me, I love the new Health record. It's called Rat Wars. I don't know if anyone in here listens to Health.
Yeah, yes. I didn't know that either.
Yes, it's called Rat Wars.
I've got, very good. On top of all this, I got a playlist where it's just new music to check out this year that is like 40 hours long. So I'm adding to that now.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, that band's first for me was the Black Queen. It was the first like foray I had into like sort of dreamscapey stuff. And then Mike and Jeremy got me into Health. It's more industrial, electronic kind of thing. Really cool. So that record was awesome. Like Mike, the Paramore record, This Is Why, is excellent. It's perfect pop music. It's not as good as After Laughter for me, but I do love it still.
My wife would be happy to hear that. She's a big Paramore fan.
Honestly, both of our wives will be real into this podcast because there's a lot of Taylor Swift talk and a lot of Paramore talk. So they're gonna be
Paramore's and if there's like another branch off from that, Boy Genius record was awesome.
Love
and that's
that
sort of
record.
Tangentially related, yeah. To
huge Paramore, Phoebe. I know, yeah, I'm a huge
Phoebe
Bridgers
is like my favorite of the trio for sure. But love the her. Record's awesome.
Paramore for my money is the best band playing live music right now. Like I think that they are unstoppable live. I just saw them this year.
Wasn't the tour awesome?
What was that?
Wasn't that tour awesome? Like
you went to yes,
yeah,
just unbelievable. Yeah. Seriously, like I could believe how locked in they were. You watch a band play, and it's just like they are locked in right now.
Yeah, I got into Paramore because of a show. Mike and Jeremy and Matt, our drummer, used to all work for the company Supro, the amplifier company, and their guitar player used the amps, and they were, you know, sort of invited out to the show like, hey, the company gets a few tickets because Jeremy worked in arts relations and Mike built the amps and stuff. And somebody dropped out last minute, and I was like a total casual Paramore listener in the sense that, yeah, I grew up and they were huge. And Mike was like, dude, we got like one extra. Do you want to go see Paramore? And I was like, I guess I know like four Paramore songs, but like I'm literally doing nothing. I'll go. And I walked out like, holy smokes, man. That shit was so good. And then I dove into the album that was relevant at the time, After Laughter. And I was like, this is like not what I remembered Paramore being, because it wasn't. It was a very different song, very different album. And I was like, holy shit, this is like excellent, like, I don't know, like synthwave pop or something from the 80s. And it's like not what it was. And I even like, I like a lot of the old Paramore stuff too, but it was fucking awesome. So yeah, just died in the wool after that. Mike said Tomb Mold beat me to it. Awesome death metal record. I haven't heard a lot of like just straight up old sounding death metal anymore. That's like not all that polished. Jeremy was big on the new Horrendous record too. Is that what it's, that's a band, right? Horrendous.
Yeah, Horrendous.
Yeah, I listened to the album once and it was very cool too. Like a similar sort of thing. There's something else on here that I forgot. So I guess we're just gonna have to live with that.
And I'll say, I'll say, because this happens every year, regardless of if it came out this year or not, there's always new artists that you get into.
Yeah.
The year that I got heavy into Boz Scaggs and Steely Dan. And that's because of Jeremy.
Yeah.
So we just had that experience. Note, oh, go ahead.
At the end of last year, a record came out called Present Tense by a band called Yumizuma. And it's 2022, but like Mike said, I got so into it this year because of a recommendation from a friend. That was a band called Yumizuma. And I was like, that was like the soundtrack to the BT Band Tour for me, because it's like really, really chill sort of shit. And I got obviously burnt out on hearing heavy music every single day. And we'd be in the van, and I work from the road when I'm on tour, and I would just be like on my laptop and like super tired. And I would put that record on my AirPods and just like super zone out while our driver was driving. I'm like looking at like cool mountains in Europe. And like, I just like sort of associate the tour with that album. So it's not 2023, but it was a mid to late 22, I think. And special shout out for the metal world, not an album, but that new Job for a Cowboy single was one of the best death metal songs I've heard in a long time. It was really cool to see that band.
I was going to say that's how we felt too. We loved seeing them back, and it was refreshing to hear that quality come out of them, you know, first hurrah back.
Not just like a mailed in, but go ahead.
One band that sort of we just did an interview with Jim from Caligula's Horse.
Cool.
And
cool
they're awesome. And he actually, because you just said like, oh yeah, somebody just, you know, it's music we discovered this year. And I think it might be a band that you guys might like if you've not heard of them before. Have you ever heard of Exploring Birdsong?
No.
It's right like there really you cool. definitely should. It's like prog rock, pop rock. It's all piano and synth based. Like there's awesome. No guitars at all. But it sounds so massive. Like it's very interesting. Yeah, definitely check them out. And yeah, anyone else listening, if you didn't check them out from the Jim Caligula's Horse episode, definitely check them out, because I haven't stopped listening to them since that episode.
always happy to add.
Oh yeah, definitely check them out. I think you're gonna like them. Is there anything? Yeah. Is there anything else that you guys would like to pass on to our audience before we wrap up here?
Just for anyone who considers 3 years a long wait in today's release world, thanks for sticking with us, and it's felt like an eternity for us, but we're not stopping, so thanks for sticking with us.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I'm very excited to put this new record out. I feel like we're gonna take one if not multiple steps up just as a band. It's just the way that I feel about this music, and I'm excited to see you guys when we're back in Pittsburgh, and anyone else who listens whenever we come through, wherever they listen through, I guess.
We'll see you back at Jurgles.
Back at Jurgles.
We will be Jurgles round two.
Before we hop off, I hate the idea of a one-way recommendation. What's for the two of you, what's your favorite record that came out this year? Just so that way it's on my, if it's not on my radar, I can put it on it.
I'm a big fan of that new Tesseract record.
That's another great one. I just saw Intervals was just on tour with them. We were just hanging out. Okay.
I like the Zenith Passage record.
It's really good.
Yep. That record rocks.
Matt, you can go ahead. I don't want to steal the
I know you have you do awards and stuff, so I don't want to step on your toes. Don't give it all away.
These aren't final.
Yeah, these aren't final. The Sleep Token record is up there with the cool stuff that they did with their newest album. I think also the new Invent Animate, more in like the metalcore
is that
scene.
Brody's in that band now. Toured with their drummer when he still plays in Seder, but
he's the drummer for Seder. Seder's awesome. Shout out Seder. They were really cool guys. We talked to them too after that Jurgle show.
Good guys. Yeah, I like Brody a lot. I'll listen to the Invent Anime. All right.
Currents dropped a record too. That's pretty good. It's kind of in the same vein.
Yes.
Yeah. They kind of feel like sister bands almost. Like,
they do. Right. And they always release around the same time too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. I'll give them both a spin.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right. Let well, us know what you think. Yeah, we appreciate you guys. I'm sure we'll keep in touch. I definitely want to hear your final. I'm going to check your podcast out too, and I want to hear your final list and all that stuff.
I want to see the toothpaste video.
Oh, I want to see that too. Yeah.
As we're going off, I'll send it to you. So you guys do your clothes. I'll send it.
Love it. But anyways, thank you guys. We appreciate you. Everybody listening, check out CryptoDira. We'll be linking all their stuff as we release the episode and all that. So show them some love and like and subscribe to our Instagram, our podcast, obviously. Definitely give these guys a follow as well. And until next time, we'll catch you later. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks
a million, guys. Thank you.